Hey, welcome to episode 409. Carm Capriotto here, and I'm hanging with AJ Neely, a young entrepreneur with an unstoppable vision. This episode will show you how to turn a passion and a dream into a $1.4 million business from nothing in 4 years. Now here's a taste.
Solid business plan together. And again, you've got someone that's in your corner that believes in you and sees your passion. It's amazing what they'll lend and lend based off that, right? Your story, your history, what you're going to do.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, Carm Capriotto here. In a few moments, AJ Neely from AJ Neely Automotive in Edgewater, Maryland, and I will have a talk about putting a dream into reality, a very up-close and personal view of AJ's ride from a racing career to a shop owner. AJ realized he couldn't be racing forever, and for that, he thought out carefully his next moves, and that vision eventually landed him the opportunity of a lifetime. Planning your move ahead is like playing chess. It's a recipe for success or a step towards disaster. Invest in yourself and listen to this episode. You will thank yourself later. Hey, have you made plans to attend the Napa Expo? Remarkable Results Radio is so proud to partner with Napa Auto Care and the upcoming 2020 Napa Expo. It'll be here sooner than you think. Join Napa in Las Vegas, April 6th through 9th, 2020, to discover the latest innovations in the auto care industry. This is an event that you don't want to miss. Contact your Napa store to learn more. Our content is so valuable to the aftermarket industry because we're talking the context of our industry. And this episode is very relevant to give those who dream of becoming a shop owner a chance to view what it really takes to become one. What are the qualities and the strategies needed to become that successful business owner every entrepreneur wants to achieve? You know, you may know someone who's struggling in their shops. Some are trying to find a good location. And others, well, they're looking for owners who want to sell to them. This episode is exactly for them, and they will thank you for sharing this. AJ and I went into a bit of his legacy as a racer, but concentrated on the transformation he made from a one-bay shop at home to a nine-bay facility kind of overnight. This is a story for a movie of the week. It comes with guts, risk, and reward. All the right ingredients. It shows that the proper attitude, business plan, and the right advisors can contribute to uncompromising success. So many great takeaways here to help you in your own personal success strategy. Now remember, there are so many ways to run a great business. Our goal with the podcast is to cast these ideas to you in hopes that you will pick up one and run with it. Hey, find the fuel to ignite your dream into reality with this in-your-face, no-nonsense discussion with AJ Neely. Hey, warm welcome to AJ Neely from Neely's Auto Service in Edgewater, Maryland. Hey, AJ.
What's up, Carm?
Hey, man. Glad to have you here. So it all started in 2011.
Yes.
You have such an interesting story. I just can't wait to share it with everyone. Racer, a man with a dream, very big passion about being your own shop owner. Where did this bug of being a race driver come from?
Being a race driver, that I figured that out late, actually. That was in high school when I went to my first autocross, but before that, I had to get my license. But that's when I went to my first autocross event in high school. They call it the Go Fast Crack Pipe. I had a hit of that, and that was it. You know, that's all I could think about. So that's where the bug came from as far as racing is concerned, yes.
I mean, you were doing this professionally, weren't you?
Yeah, right at my pinnacle in 2009, 2010, I ran professionally with Volkswagen and the Volkswagen Jetta TDI Cup for a couple of years, you know, had sponsorships and things of the like to pursue my passion. Yeah, it was an incredible, incredible run.
Maybe one day you've got to come back and tell us that whole behind-the-scenes story on being a racer and your sponsors and all that you did and the passion that you learned. Did that really help start you off on the vision of wanting to be a shop owner?
When I started actually working on vehicles, that happened right out of high school, and I knew, I have to say, even early on in my childhood, I was always kind of I would always be looking ahead. I always had some kind of a vision. So I knew even then when I was wrenching on cars right out of high school that I foresaw myself being a shop owner. And yeah, definitely kind of running up the ladder as far as my racing career was concerned, there was so much I learned along the way, especially on the marketing side of things. I tell you what, the easiest part of the entire endeavor was just actually getting behind the wheel and driving. Everything else leading up to that were also the most difficult and the hardest parts of that whole journey. Definitely the things I learned along the way, no doubt.
Great analogy to being a shop owner. You could go into the bay and wrench, which is your passion, but when you got to go into the office and be the CEO, there's the analogy.
Yeah, certainly. I would not be where I am today if it weren't for all my previous experiences that led me to this moment in time, right? If I did not want to pursue a racing career, maybe I could have started a lot earlier as a shop owner, but I think I would have made more mistakes along the way potentially. So I think all the experiences that culminated to the day that I started my own auto repair shop, all those life experiences allowed me to take it to the next level.
When you look back, you don't regret anything.
Of course not. Oh my goodness. No, I mean, as far as racing, the racing career was concerned. Yeah. I mean, I definitely had aspirations of getting even higher up the ladder and it's hard to explain, but when you're in anyone that's kind of been in that industry or gone up to that level, they say it takes money to get you there. It takes talent to keep you there. There couldn't be a truer phrase out there for the industry itself. And so as far as coming up with the funds and the marketing partners required to kind of take it to the next level. Also too, the fun was also inversely proportional to the achievements, accomplishments, getting to that level. So yeah, no regrets.
Having been a salesman and knowing that you had to market yourself, did that really help you in business today?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I mean, a lot of this stuff makes sense. You know, I'm part of with RLO Training, their Bottom Line Impact Group, and John Woffler. And that, I'd say I kind of had a little bit of a head start when I went through the Gorilla Shop Management course with them initially. When we went over that whole chapter about marketing, all that stuff just clicked and made sense. And there's so many parallels to both sides.
You wrenched for Acura Honda?
It was a Honda Acura independent repair shop in Pasadena, okay. Maryland. Yeah, okay. It was a Honda Man's Auto Service. And I got that job right out of high school. I got the bug as far as working on vehicles when I got my license. When I got my first vehicle, I wanted to understand how everything worked. And my dad was really cool in helping me, show me how a clutch worked, drawing it out on this notepad, because he's also a freelance storyboard artist. So he's very, very great as far as drawing things out. But I was just so fascinated with how cars worked. I was just reading books nonstop on how turbochargers worked and internal combustion engines and suspension theories. And that's where that bug came from. And so, yeah, working right out of high school.
And the bug to be an owner came from what? You wrenching on the side?
I was wrenching on the side. I moved into a house in 2008, and it had this massive garage attached to the back of it. It was funny, when we went and bought it, the first two words in the owner's description was a mechanic's dream. So that said it all. I didn't have to look at the house itself. I went in, saw the garage, said that was mine. So yeah, no, when I was working on the side out of that garage, that definitely helped. My parents were instrumental as well to getting me and pushing me to where I am today. And I actually have an entire family of entrepreneurs and self-made people. My dad's a freelance storyboard artist. My sister is a silversmith. She makes some incredible jewelry. My mom's a real estate agent. And at one point we all worked for somebody, but my dad was always pushing me to be like, don't be dispensable, but work and keep the eyes up to look for an opportunity to do your own thing.
You just basically described the $900,000 gorilla in the room. And so I happen to know the story, and I'd love you to tell it. You've got to have that entrepreneurial dream and that push and that, that desire to, as you say, to be a forward thinker, a futurist, to drive by this huge nine bay place and then one day say, I wonder if I could make that mine.
What really opened my eyes as far as just that entrepreneurial spirit and what hard work does as far as paying off in the long run, I live that in pursuing a racing career, right? When I early on in just my autocross days, I did have these aspirations just to taking it to the next level. Conan O'Brien said it best on his last episode ever, right? He says, if you work really hard and you're really nice to people, good things will happen. And nothing could be further from the truth. And I, in that racing career aspect, I just had to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And when I was moving up the ladder and getting sponsors together at a professional level, you know, I was still working full time as well as a technician at this other shop. And, you know, I would spend my lunch breaks just cold calling people. I had my 1 hour list of stuff I had to get done in that time frame, and it was just this relentless pursuit, and I loved absolutely every minute of it because I was so passionate about it. And the same thing can be said too for starting this automotive repair shop. I knew if I worked really hard and I had a vision and I went to bed dreaming about whatever this vision was, I can make that happen. It can be done. And so yeah, driving by this on my little test drive route that I had around my house, there was a shop a quarter of a mile down the road, 9 bays. There was someone working on and off out of this location, you know, every once in a while. And I saw the same 4 vehicles in the same 4 bays driving by this place. I'm like, I was just getting mad, right? I'm like, nobody's making money out of that place. Someday I'm going to get that. I'm going to buy that. And then, you know, a couple of years later, here we are.
Just a few years later, no money in the bank. 15% down payment, I'm sure, was somewhere in that vicinity.
When I first started my shop in 2011, I was a bachelor, right? I was doing anything and everything under the sun. I was doing some background acting. I got my SAG membership when I was running with Volkswagen, which was really funny. I was crewing for a race team here and there. I was also working as a pro driver, as an independent contractor for automotive education companies. And one of these automotive education companies called Automatic, based out of Arizona, they hired me to work for them as a pro driver. And their big client was Toyota. And they hired me. They loved my work ethic. They kept bringing me on. And that's actually where I met my wife. She worked for that company at the time, Stephanie. Before she knew it, I knew it. I was already looking 5 years down the road when I met her and we were dating, and I could just see the vision, right? And she was living in Long Beach, California at the time. Of course, I'm out here in Maryland. And unbeknownst to her, I had it all planned out. All right, I'm going to marry her. She's going to relocate here to Maryland from sunny Long Beach, California. I'm just going to drop all the other extracurricular activities I was doing and just focus on the automotive repair shop, because I just knew long term that just made the most sense.
Hey, Carm here to highlight why the NAPA Auto Care Program may be right for you. Let's talk about warranties. How long do you warranty your repairs or services for your customers? Does your warranty cover your customers anywhere in the country? Now, if you're a NAPA Auto Care Center, you have confidence in knowing your customers are covered for 24 months or 24,000 miles nationwide. Now, that's because one of the many benefits of the NAPA Auto Care Program is the nationwide peace of mind warranty. The Nationwide Peace of Mind Warranty provides the best coverage in the industry, and it allows your shop to compete with other national brands. It's a written warranty that is honored at more than 17,000 NAPA Auto Care Center locations from Florida to California and everywhere in between. Wow, 17,000 locations. That's more than any other automotive repair brand. When you're part of the NAPA Auto Care Program, no matter where your customers travel, if they experience a problem with a covered repair, they can count on NAPA Auto Care to be nearby to get them back on the road. The Nationwide Peace of Mind Warranty covers parts and labor on qualifying repairs and services for 24 months or 24,000 miles. And the warranty claim process is easy, too. If you're ready to give your customers the security and confidence of a nationwide warranty and provide them with peace of mind, knowing that they are receiving a quality repair or service, especially if they're unable to return to you for warranty, then NAPA Auto Care may be right for you. Contact your local NAPA Auto Parts store today and learn more about the Nationwide Peace of Mind Warranty and the hundreds of other reasons to become part of the NAPA Auto Care family, the largest network of independent automotive repair shops in the country. Are you a soothsayer, AJ? I mean, really, do people come to you and say, so what's going on next year?
Yeah, I definitely have a vision. You know, I've got my quarterly goals. I've got my my 1 year, my 2 year, my 5 year, my 10 year. I got my BHAG, my big, hairy, audacious goal, right? So I know what that end moment will be for me and us at Neely Auto Service, and I just have to fill in the blanks to figure out how to get there. You know, back to my wife, I knew that this was going to be the future, so we actually signed on with the Gorilla Shop Management course with RLO training, and that was a life-changing event for us. We learned absolutely everything there was about running an automotive repair business other than working on cars, because I already knew that. I was already obviously wrenching every day. So we were implementing stuff next day that we were learning, you know, in the class at night. And it was a rigorous, again, Gorilla Shop Management. It couldn't be a better term for it. And it was just it was a grind, but we learned so much.
AJ, how soon into starting the business did you decide to get a coach?
You know, I started it in 2011, but I really didn't take it seriously until I met my wife. And it was probably in 2000, I think it was in 2000 and end of 2014. It was like right around when we got married. We got married in September of 2014. So that's when we took the GSM course. And then that spurred everything else that happened from that moment on. After we graduated from the course, John Waffler was our personal business coach, because we weren't making enough money to get into like a bottom line impact group. But he was there holding our hand every step of the way, from, you know, scouting locations to hiring our first employee. You know, all these are all like first time jitters for us, right? But then again, too, we were young and dumb. We don't know any better. You know, we also don't have any kids. So it's just like, we did have some naysayers initially saying there's no way that you can go get a, you know, a $900,000 location and just start a shop from the ground up. Like that's unheard of. People don't do it that way. People move out, they lease a location, they build that, and then they get to a point to where they can acquire something. And
are you a person you just don't say no to, or you don't know isn't in your vocabulary?
We have kind of a saying within the Neelys, like, you know, no is hard for us. If the vision's there, it's hard to hold us down. It really is.
And I love what you just said. We all struggle, I think, in a personal way and in a business way to set goals. We're bombarded all the time from our business coaches and anything we read that we've got to have goals, set goals. They need to be short range, long range, big, you know, and the big, hairy, audacious goals, which is cool to hear you say. How hard has it been for you to reach those short and some of your long terms?
I think it all does have to come down to attitude. That's huge. I'm a pretty positive individual. I feel pretty confident I can help inspire others around me. And there's so much I learned along the way, right? I mean, you know, obviously being now part of a bottom line impact group, being surrounded by other successful shop owners, man, you know, and even leading up to that, I always read really great, inspiring, you know, leadership book and business books. And there's a commonality and a theme between all these different books. And a lot of these things have to do with making sure you surround yourself with individuals that you aspire to be. So I make sure, and this is just a life goal, is to not surround myself by people that's just going to bring me down. I'm only going to, and I choose to surround myself with people that are only going to bring me up. That alone, that just starting point really, really does help making sure that others hold me and my wife and this business accountable for all the goals that we do put in place. And then it's just a matter of execution, and it's just right. You know, I have my regimen, you know, daily. I write my goals out. What I'm going to do that day, what I'm going to do that week, that month, that quarter, that year. I have a saying, and I've got a massive dry erase board in my home office. And I just, my saying is wipe the board clean, get this stuff done, wipe it off. And just continuing to make sure I stay motivated and getting up and doing that. And those quarterly meetings definitely help when we meet.
Is it good to wipe it so that you could reprioritize it also?
Well, wiping it off means that I knocked it out. It's done, right? We're a digital shop, so everything we use is on Google Drive, and I use the Google Keep app, and that's a great just note-taking app that we use to kind of help prioritize.
Books. You just mentioned books. Were you a reader in the early days?
I really wasn't. I've been kind of a late bloomer as far as reading books.
Wait a minute. Stop for a minute. Late bloomer. Would you mind? Would you mind sharing with us how old you are?
I am 35 right now.
Yeah, you're a late bloomer, all right.
Yeah. You know, I would more or less, if I read much of anything, you know, prior to me even getting and starting this business on my own, I was just really just reading magazines and, you know, technical publications and things of that sort. Having now just this overall just growth mindset, instead of one of what was, again, just as early as 5 years ago, just being a technician or wearing all the hats, now really kind of having, I've transitioned now to a point where I'm just looking down the entire operation. So I need to be growth focused. And that's what I truly love now. And I've, so as a result, my job is to work on myself, right? And then also too is, you know, Barry Barrett, he's great, man. He's just, you look, your new role is to be a developer of people. And I love that. And he's got a core value of grow or die, right? And honestly, I encompass that as well. I love that.
I know Barry, he's contributed an awful lot to the show. In fact, it was Barry who continued to pound me, you know, every time I would interview him about leaders are readers. And so he inspired me to create the books page on my website. And every time someone comes on and they mention a book, I love to go and insert it on the books page. So do you have a book that may not be on my books page that you've read that is one of your favorites?
My biggest recommended book that I have for anyone that is just becoming an entrepreneur, or a new shop owner, or really wants to start to work on their business, of course, I'd have to say Michael Gerber's The E-Myth. I mean, that's a good just ground zero type book that you can, it is the prerequisite to life, you know, at that point, right? So I highly recommend that book. I think the other one, and Barry's part of the EOS plan, but Traction by Gino Wickman, is also really good. And then if I have to throw in a third one, as far as hiring, definitely the Ideal Team Player by, I think it's Peter Lencioni, I believe it is.
Yeah, Lencioni.
Lencioni. Yeah. Great book.
It's great to see you as a young man and you know, reaching out and being such a passionate entrepreneur and doing all the right things. I just can't even imagine what your success is going to look like in 50 years, but you know, because you have it planned, right? You know, there's a lot of people out there listening, you know, wanting to make a move and a purchase or add on. And, you know, that new shop that you came across and you needed money to do it. And you had some issues in closing an environmental. And I remember when you and I were talking, you said, Carm, don't cheap out on lawyers when buying property. And I, you know, I've been there and done that myself, actually, you know, in all the years that I've been around. Tell me why that's so important.
Obviously, a new build might be a little different, but I mean, what we did is we bought an existing location. There was it used to be a transmission repair shop. It was built in like the late 50s, early 60s. And you know, back then too, it was like the wild, wild west, man.
The story goes is you never know what's in the ground.
No, you don't. You don't. And so during this process of getting this location, I mean, first, before we could even get there, we had to get an approval on a loan. We had to be the winning bid. You know, there were so many other hurdles that led before we were able and we're in a position to actually continue on purchasing.
That may be worth discussing and sharing with our audience. You know, you had you were going against multiple people to a widow. You weren't the highest bid, but you still got the deal.
This was in 2015, September 2015 at this point. A couple months leading up to that point, we were actively looking for a new location. You know, again, the one big garage we had, I had cars parked up and down the street in my neighbor's driveways. I mean, it was just all out chaos. We knew we needed to move out. So anyway, this location that I just had my heart set on for so long, again, there was no activity there. I found an incredible, and I will say this, you know, again, going back to that theme of surrounding yourself with great people, you know, we kind of call that your board of directors. There are a few key people that need to be on there that just need to be vetted, right? Again, banker, lawyer, a broker. And so this commercial broker, you know, he is in my corner and at the seat. He has got a seat at the table, because if it wasn't for him, none of this would have happened. And he was the only broker that I found that actually took the time to really do some digging on this location, and found out that it was actually going up for sale because the previous owner had actually passed away. They transitioned ownership into the wife's name. Yeah, we happened to be at the right place at the right time. It was literally like September 1st. We looked at the location. It was a diamond in the rough, because this thing was nasty. I mean, this location was just horrible condition, but it had good bones, right? So anyway, I asked my broker right then and there. It's like, okay, you know, what's it going to take? to get it. You just tell me what to do. I'll make it happen. I don't care what it takes. I just need direction, right? It's like, well, you need to find a conventional bank that's going to back you. This could potentially be up to $1 million property, and it's got to be a conventional bank, and you've got to come up with 15% down at least. I'm like, okay, let me just get to work. And then I started contacting a couple people that he knew as well from banks that I worked with. We developed our business plan. We finalized that, put that together. That was absolutely instrumental. Because the big thing that I've learned, especially when acquiring commercial property, it's not based on a moment in time of your current credit score or your current credit history or, you know, your buying power. It's about what you could make, right? It's looking into the future. So it's very different and dynamic. So, because I'm like, well, I have no collateral to be able to put up, you know, for this kind of a purchase. But if you put a really solid business plan together, and again, you've got someone that's in your corner that believes in you and sees your passion, it's amazing what they'll lend and lend based off that, right? Your story, your history, what you're going to do. Again, looking at the plan. So we found a bank that believed in us. In the midst of that, we had to work on that 15% down. And it's amazing just how incredible our customers are, you know, and how diehard, and they're such raving fans for our place of business. And just in conversation, letting them know what our plans were and that we had to like source these funds to put down on this property.
Wait a minute. So you weren't bashful to go out and tell your customer, hey, you see that place just down the road? I'm going to buy it. I'm in tight and I need some relief.
Actually, it never really came up like that. I wasn't actively asking them like, hey, I need X amount of money. It was just all of our customers at that time. I mean, I only had like maybe 200 to 300 active customers, right? I mean, it was small. It was just my wife and I in this one little bay garage. They knew that we had plans to expand and grow. And so every time a customer kind of come in, they'd ask about, hey, how are those plans going? And they were just genuinely interested. And then we'd tell them, and then as a result, it's like, oh, you know, we'll invest in you. Like, what? You know, you're kidding me, right? And we got three investors, private investors on board that again, without them, we would not have had that big chunk to put down on the property. And they just invested in us, right? They don't have any stake in the company or the property or anything of that sort. So we wiped our hands clean since then with that. And just absolutely instrumental to make all this happen again within a month, because they were taking bids up until September 30th. They were going to make a decision after that weekend.
You had 30 days to pull this thing together.
Yeah, it was insane. And it was literally September 30th that we got the commitment letter from the bank that they were on board so we could actually submit our offer. And the last ditch effort that we did, we wrote a heartfelt letter to the seller, right? Letting her know that, look, we are not going to flip this property. This is our what we foresee as our future, and we want to take advantage of this location to really change the way auto repair is performed. And so it was an agonizing weekend. It was like on a Friday, and then we had to wait till that Monday for them to come back. But we got the call. We actually put in a offer for $975,000, and they countered for $900,000. So they took back $75,000 from our initial offer, and we ended up. We end up getting selected, so it was amazing.
That's a great story. It's, you know, there's so much wisdom there because, you know, you, frankly, AJ, you had to put your marketing hat on, and you didn't even know you were, but you did, from the business plan to the private investors, and the banks had to believe in you.
Yeah, it's true. Again, that whole previous experience in the racing career, just working on trying to get marketing partners together, yada, yada, all that stuff just
you truly realizing helps. That they were investing in a winner. I mean, at least your intentions was to go to race to win. You weren't just going there to have fun. And, you know, it goes to show, you know, you're way mature beyond your years in how you had all this, formulated. So just for our audience's sake about the environmental issue, and I think it's important to bring up. We haven't talked a lot of environmental on the podcast, and I think you sharing what happened will be good for our listeners.
Yeah, and that was just it, right? Beginning of October, we were selected, but that was just, and it was amazing. We celebrated that day, and you know, but that's just one more step towards getting to closing or getting the doors open, right? So, yeah, the next step was for the bank to even back the loan. They had they had to perform at least a phase one environmental study. So that's really just a very superficial lay of the land. They also kind of look at any, if there were any reports with the Maryland Department of the Environment to see if there were, you know, again, any violations that they had. So they kind of look at the rap sheet, they look at the lay of the land, and then they determine whether that, whether or not they need to go to a phase two. They did require a phase two environmental study, and that was something I had to pay out of pocket on both ends of this. But it was in my best interest that I pay for it, because any findings that occur, it kind of puts the seller in a corner, because I'm not sure, I can't vouch for every state, but in where we are in Maryland, they legally couldn't sell the location or that property until these environmental issues were resolved or remediated.
And they may not be willing to do it right now, and so you sit on the sidelines.
Yeah. So the phase two is, you know, I think I paid like $12,000 for that thing, and they come out with all the sonar machines, and they just do these like, you know, that they do these core samples in different parts of the property, and they're looking for all these underground storage tanks. And I don't remember how much time went by, and you have to use a vendor that's approved by the bank too, right? So you can't just use Joe Schmo down the street to do it. It's to their specifications that it's done correctly.
The bank's in it. They don't want that back.
No, exactly. So, and meanwhile, while this is going on, and even as we were working on putting the bid in, we had a law firm that we were using that were on in our corner. And again, that was instrumental in being able to, for writing the proper language when we went to closing, especially with the environmental issues being involved. And so after the phase two study was performed, there was a 2,000 gallon underground fuel tank. There was a 650 gallon heating oil tank. There was a 70 tons of soil that had to get hauled out because it was contaminated. There were three in-ground lifts in the first building that were not decommissioned correctly, so they had to get hauled out. I mean, the list was going, just it was adding up, right? It's like bam, 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 all these big projects that had to get done. And so they put the estimates out there. It was the initial estimates were anywhere from $100,000 to $150,000 to start the initial projects to kind of get this cleaned up. So there was a lot of back and forth on this. And actually there were some scenarios there where we thought the whole deal was just going to fall apart, because what had happened was they were stuck in between a rock and a hard place, because one, they did not have the funds. The sellers did not have the funds to pay for the remediation outright, but we were still willing to continue forward with the purchase of the property if we could put the funds that we were going to use to pay for the property in an escrow account, and we pull from this account to pay for the remediation. And then once we got what's called the no further action letter from the Department of the Environment, then we transfer the funds to the seller, and then it's over.
So you're saying that if, say, for example, there was $900 in the escrow account, you were pulling off of that, and would they get then the net of that?
They would get the net of that. Yeah, and then right off the top.
Because they had to give you a clean title, but they didn't have the cash to do it. I see. So you didn't have to – how much out of pocket did you have to come up with?
All I paid for were the environmental studies and the lawyers, right? I paid the lawyers a lot of money.
Got to have good lawyers.
Yeah. There are actually lawyers out there. Knowing what I know now, I probably would have gone a slightly different route as far as who I chose. Don't get me wrong. In the end, we were covered. We were great. But there are lawyers that – there's actually one lawyer that I spoke to after the fact that he specifically has experience in environmental litigation. So if you can find a lawyer with that kind of resume, that's a huge plus.
Do you need that right up front, though, buying a piece of property, or only when you find a problem?
You know, again, back to that board of directors. If you've got maybe a handful of lawyers at your table that you could choose from or tap in case you do get into a bind, then you should be set, right? You know, if you got to take out the starting pitcher and put in a relief pitcher, you know.
Great story. Thank you so much for that. But then now, you get the place. You got to hire. You got 9 bays. Do you duplicate your business and start working out of one or two, or do you grow and hire and spend the money on marketing and remodeling and paint and light and heat? Because what I know about your business, $123,000 to $1.4 million in what, a few years?
Yeah, that was, let's see, 123,000 sales in, I think, 2014. And then in, let's see, 2018, yeah, we did 1.441. So, it's been insane. The whole run is incredible. It's been incredible. And yeah, I mean, to hiring and it, while all this is going on as far as the acquisition of the location, yeah, now I'm learning for the first time, like, how to hire, building out the location, because the place was just a dump, honestly. The whole thing had needed to be cleaned up. So, yeah, equipment needed to be purchased. And I was kind of hoping on there's a local economic development corporation here that was kind of relying on to help finance the build out of the location. It fell through, which kind of bummed me out. And I just started racking up credit card debt like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it was I was just getting like those 0% credit cards, you know, for 18 months. And just I had American Express cards, like no limit, and just kept swiping. And I just like, again, I had the vision. I knew that we could do this, right? And it was going to be tough times, but it had to get done. And yeah, new lifts.
But AJ, are you like socked in debt right now?
No, I'm out. I'm back in debt with, I made some equipment purchases and stuff like that just recently, but
in order to your upstart costs that you kept swiping a card, do you recommend that was a good strategy to anyone?
No, I'm just young and dumb, right? No, I mean, in hindsight, if you wanted to take the conservative road, don't buy anything and build anything from the ground up. That's what I've learned now. Acquire an existing business or maybe go and lease something. But
let me stop you for a moment. $900,000 building, you needed 150 down and you were able to get that. Did you have any other funding that you had to acquire for startup? Like you said, you probably went in there lean and you just kept swiping cards in order to get the stuff you needed to start the business.
Yeah, I mean, there were things that just had to get done and had to get purchased. Okay. So, no, it was a matter of swiping it and just, you know, some months just paying the minimum to keep it going. And some, again, were 0%. So I knew I could just hold off paying them and just push that back to a later date. So I had to look at my balance sheets, but I think when it was all said and done, so there was a lot of spending going on. When we closed on the property, actually April 30th of 2016. And then we spent 2.5 months like hell. I mean, it was amazing. So I'm working during the day at our one little one bay garage, cause I still got to make money. And then, I'd clock out of there and we would roll down to, the new building. And my wife and I, I'll never forget, man. We were just blaring music in there every night, go down there with a, you know, 12 pack of beer and we're just working, you know, just making it happen and, painting and, renovating the front office and new lights and yeah, new lifts, new floor. I mean, equipment, you know, parts, just, it was,
I want to tell you something. I think you and I are brothers from different mothers because when you described your earlyhood, you know, probably in your 20s, when you were burning the candle at 17 different ends, you're talking to me. I did that. You're talking about one of my first businesses on my own. You know, I looked in the window. My wife was next to me. She looks in the window and I saw all the opportunity and she saw all the work.
Right.
And we worked for 2 weeks to get it open. You know, I'm hearing you and I have such a warm feeling inside. It's not like it's not amazing that these stories are told, but it's amazing that I've bumped into this interview and have gotten to know you and realized that we're kindred spirits in a lot of ways because I'm like you, I'm an ideas person and I kind of know where the future's going and those aren't bad qualities to have.
No, definitely not. It's a calming feeling when you can remove uncertainty in your life, right? So, and visions help.
Yeah, they do. Hey, look, we covered a lot of things, and there's no doubt that I think a lot of the things that you said our listeners are going to appreciate, have value, and listen to learn at least just one thing. And there was a ton of things to learn, but I'd love to get into, you know, how you're running the business, come back again, and we'll get in a little deeper.
No, definitely. I'd be honored to be back on the show, Carm.
Super.
Thank you.
AJ Neely, Neely's Auto Service, Edgewater, Maryland. Thanks for being here, man.
Thanks for having me, Carm. Living the dream.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.